Blog Talk Radio.
Warmest selection Sunday greetings and salutations. It's time once again for your Bi-Coastal Lovin', the Bi-Coastal edition of the Robin Mobb Show, the Selection Sunday special. He's in California. He's Jeremy Lynch, and from the capital of the 17th state, I'm Mobb Havner here in the Batcave, continuing to be the only show on the World Wide Web that makes the haters clear the back whilst we stay out front like handicapped parking. An unofficial national holiday today, kids. It's Selection Sunday. What's up, Big J?
Oh, Christmas Day. Love it. Santa Claus comes around, 2:30, 3 o'clock my time. Just opening up the presents and finding a couple lumps of coal, too, this year.
Well, and we're gonna focus the entire time we have with you, at least before we hit to the champagne room, on this year's edition of the Madness. First, let's get to this. How are the ladies?
They're good. They're good. I've been prepping for my trip to the 702, which is coming a little early this year. Usually I can fly in on Wednesday. Play some golf. I'm flying in Tuesday night this year. For those of you who don't know, 702 is the greater Vegas area. all parts southwestern Nevada. And I did something that I haven't done yet, and maybe it was me, feeling a little guilty because I was going early, but decided to pre-make 3 nights worth of dinner for the West Coast EP so that when she would come home from work, she wouldn't have to worry about homework, dinner, and, bedtime routine. She would just have to worry about the latter two.
Look at you taking a page from Uncle Rob's Keep the Wife Off My Back playbook. I only been married 5 or 6 months. That's a quality move.
Hey, after we've known each other for 19 years. We're coming up on our 13 year anniversary. I've learned through trial and definitely error that this probably should have happened starting 13 years ago.
right.
But anyway, how's the East Coast EP?
Midwest Coast EP is fine. We're starting to house hunt, which is fun. We had great dinner with our friends Tim and Stacy Shiflett this evening. So we're enjoying things. I got the dogs running around here in the back cave. The lovely Midwest Coast EP, almost off to dreamland because she's got to get up the official teenage boy of the Rob Mobb Show so he can get off to school. So.
He needs to get his ass up himself.
I'm with you.
Come on now.
Make sure.
Come on,
yeah,
now.
I know.
I'm trying to do that with my 8-year-old.
Okay. As you know, if you've listened to the Rob Mobb Show, which is what you're listening to now here on Blog Talk Radio, this event is our favorite sporting event, mainly not just because of the plethora of money-making opportunities that pop up in these 3 weeks.
Entertainment only.
Entertainment purposes only. But if you're a basketball junkie and you played it, you watch it, you love the game like Jay and I do, this is it's always the most fun. And unfortunately, I'm going to be at work all day Thursday and Friday. But thank goodness for live streaming radio on ESPNradio.com. That's all we're going to have on. In the back room at work, so I'll be catching as much as I can while you guys are, you know, drinking umbrella drinks and turning out in a sports book. But officially,
you know, wandering around Southwest Nevada,
looking for a buffet.
looking for trouble. Looking for trouble.
Right. And to top it all off, the tournament starts on St. Patrick's Day. And
every 5 years or so, it's fantastic.
I told my wife that I figured they'd put Notre Dame in a Thursday Saturday so they could wear their green unis on St. Patty's Day, but they ended up in a Friday Sunday. Which brings us to Tuesday and Wednesday, the first four. Only the NCAA could screw something up. It was called the first four, and then they started calling it the first round with the play-in games. And now it's back to the first four, and then the first round is actually the Thursday-Friday games like it always had been before. Now, you and I have two different blasts on this, and I'm going to let you fire first on yours, and then I'll take mine.
Yeah, speaking about, you know, and for anybody who's listened to this show for any amount of time or number of episodes that they've been so kind to listen to us pontificate about all things sports, life, entertainment, gibberish, whatever.
Alcohol.
was there? I don't know. VIP Saturday.
There might have been.
I don't know. I don't remember. So I don't understand how the committee gets to where they get to in terms of picking in this case, the 11 seeds that are playing their way into the big tournament. You know, it basically tells me you're going to reward high level or high major mediocrity. And Vandy, Wichita State, TSUN, Tulsa, really? I'm looking at you because the committee has been forever saying, go play somebody on the road. Don't be afraid to schedule up and challenge yourself because they wanted to see, you know, they wanted a way to compare teams that you can't really compare. You know, obviously these teams that I'm talking about, Vanderbilt, you know, the four of them, obviously if they were in a conference like Monmouth, what is that, NEAC, MEAC?
Yeah. No, they're in the MAC with two A's.
Okay. So they you can't compare them. Obviously, those schools like Vandy, Wichita, Michigan, Tulsa, they would be pretty good in the MAC. But you take a team like Monmouth, and they win 13 road games, you know, 17 neutral road, go 17-6. They play the likes of USC and win, Notre Dame and win, Georgetown and win, UCLA and win. I mean, yeah, granted, when they scheduled them, they had no idea that Georgetown and, you know, UCLA were going to be garbage. They scheduled them. They played them. They beat them. That's all they could do. They have a great year. They get clipped by a pretty good Iona team in the championship game of their conference, and instead of rewarding them for doing all that, they basically say, well, we're going to use the scapegoat or the out clause of you lost three games to under or above 200 RPI teams. Well, that's not their fault necessarily. Yeah, they should have won those games. But other teams in the tournament lost. No one lost multiple games to above 200. Although Syracuse, you should be counted double for losing to St. John's.
We're not talking about Chris Mullen either.
Yeah, I'll get into Syracuse when we get to their bracket or their region. But I just feel like the committee changes the criteria year to year. One year it's RPI. One year it's top 50 wins. One year it's road and neutral wins. You know, it's like this moving
It's a moving target.
And it gets so frustrating to end up saying, okay, who are the bubble teams? You know, St. Mary's, you know, they had a great year. You know, I would suggest leaving the state of California if I were them every once in a while. You know, my San Diego State team, you know, try beating Fresno every once in a while. You might get in. You know, they beat Cal, but they didn't have – they played the fifth or sixth toughest schedule out of conference, but they didn't beat anybody. I mean, they lost to Little Rock, lost to Grand Canyon. That didn't look good. although I will say, Dan Marley is their coach at Grand Canyon, and they're in a transition period from D2 to D1, and they had quite a squad, actually. But it's no excuse. You shouldn't lose that game, especially at home. But, you know, you got the St. Mary's, you got San Diego State, Monmouth, these teams that have great years and don't get rewarded. It's just frustrating, especially when you, okay, what are we going to see? The Shockers got in at 11 for what? What'd they do? They didn't win any games. You know, yeah, they didn't have Van Vliet for, you know, five or six games, but who cares? You know, Vandy, you know, what'd you do? You played in the SEC. How many teams did you guys get in? Two. Stink. You know, TSUN, you're getting rewarded for winning games without LeVert, and, you know, it's the same argument for why the rest of the Big Ten is down or being, you know, Sparty, some of these seeds that the Big Ten got, they're being counted down because the bottom of the Big Ten was so bad. Well, that's all that Michigan won. They were 4-11 against good teams, and they got blown out by more than 10 points, like, you know, 11 times during the year. So it just mixed messages coming out of the committee. And again, you know, we need to make it about basketball, not some individual. Everybody's got their own criteria. Here's the information. You decide. I mean, for once, I agree with Dirty Cal. Let's figure out what the criteria is, keep it like that every year, and just judge the best 68 out.
I don't disagree. Everything you said makes complete and total sense. My blast, at least on the first floor, is simply this. The 16 seed matchup with the College of the Holy Cross and Southern University features the SWAC champ. Now, they've been playing these playing games, I believe, since 2003, because I know I went in 2003 and again in 2004. And both of those years, the first year it was the SWAC and the MEAC, and the next year was also the MEAC champ and somebody else, which indicates to me that they're dumping these small Division I predominantly black conferences into the play-in game. And while they're going to treat it like a tournament game and they're going to get their participation trophy, which is a really nice watch with the NCAA logo on it, I would, you know, if I think the Black Coaches Caucus is going to start raising a ruckus about this, because this is crap. You don't see, the Ivy League champ, because they didn't play, Yale didn't play in a postseason tournament. They're not playing the play-in game. I think it's a disservice, and there's something dirty about it and unseemly, which, you know, they're already exploiting these kids, you know, with this. I know they're getting a free education, but, you know, if you sell a game-worn jersey on eBay, you lose your eligibility nonsense. This is the most corrupt, backwards-ass, dirty organization in the world, and they keep doing this to one of their member leagues, and that needs to stop. So that's my social responsibility soapbox, brought to you by Angry Black Guy Records.
Chris Rock will be joining us after the break.
Man. All right. Well, let's get – we're, you know, rapidly coming to the midway point, the Rob Mob Show here on Selection Sunday. Where do you want to get us started, bro? Want to start in the South?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, we've got the number one in the South, Kansas, taking on Austin Peay. I think we know which way everybody's leaning there, right?
You took the words out of my mouth. peak at the six could lose to anybody. So I don't think I do like the EP or the West Coast EP's alma mater's chances to at least give Week at the Six a game if they can get by UConn in the first round.
I'm actually taking UConn. They've got a little momentum going. I haven't had a chance to see Colorado at all this year, so I'm a little hesitant to take them.
Obviously, they're getting some credit for being in the Pac-12, which had a, you know, I got to see them a lot this year. And for once, they had a lot of depth in that conference. I was pretty impressed with how well, you know, 1 through 7 or 8 that they were, or how good they were. Very competitive, a lot of good athletes. I'll be interested to see if that was more a product of them, you know, playing against each other and everybody getting some wins and others not. But UConn got smashed by Memphis, or no, not Memphis, SMU. Not too long ago, and they're starting to round into form. So I'm with you on UConn. I would just, you know, rooting interest. I gotta put the Ralphie hat on and say go right. EP.
Yeah. Right. Maryland and South Dakota State. Not taking that particular 12. I think Maryland's going to get past them. Because it sets up, if the seeds hold with the Cal and Hawaii winner, it sets up a Maryland-Cal matchup. And I'm interested to see what – I don't know what happened to Maryland. If being here in Big Ten country, Maryland was the standard bearer for so long until the Witch got it going. And then IU somehow won the regular season title because Iowa started, you know, urinating down their game shorts, and I don't know what to make of.
Are you sure that was yellow liquid or was that brown?
Oh wow, number one or number two? I like the seeds to hold form there. I like that sets up Maryland Cal in the round of 32.
If that holds true, and don't sleep on Hawaii. You know, pun intended, I was able to see some late night games here in the 858, you know, Hawaii time.
Right.
8 o'clock tip is about 11 tip here, depending on daylight or not, because Hawaii, along with Arizona, is one of the only two states that doesn't change time, if you didn't know that. You know, dropping knowledge on you here on the Robin Mobb Show. He's Rob Haber, I'm Jeremy Finch. Check out robinmobb.com, newly redesigned and sparkly and shiny. It's a brand new present for y'all. The Maryland-Cal matchup in round of 32 would be delicious. Cal's got 3 potential NBA players, and Maryland's loaded. So if Cal gets by Hawaii, I think that could be pretty tasty. And both of those teams could beat Week at the Six, falling out of bed.
I think Week at the Six, well, we'll get to that in a second. Arizona's a team that's sort of in a mini free fall here. They were really, really rolling, and whether they lost 3 out of 5, and I got them beating whatever sacrificial lamb comes out of Dayton to their line. And I got them matched up in the second round against Miami, who I think can take out Buffalo. And what you could eventually have in the 8 would be there's a potential for an Arizona-Kansas matchup, which you haven't seen in the 8 since 1997, won by the Wildcats on their way to winning their only title. So that could get interesting. As a matter of fact, that's what I have in the 8. I have Kansas and Arizona there, but I'm going to ride Kansas to the Final Four out of the South. I just think, I mean, they never really get challenged in the 12. Oklahoma was great. Baylor's got athletes, but when there's money on the table, you can't trust them. I just think this is a veteran group, and they're clearly the best team in this region. I think it's a relatively it's got some, there's some trepidation. I think Cal, Maryland, if they show up, Arizona, Villanova's a joke. They'll get to the 16, but I think that's their ceiling.
I think with KU, if you get them in the Sweet 16, it's going to be tough because they're going to have, you know, 4 or 5 days to prepare. I think the best time to get them is second game in the 2 out of 3 days. So it would be in the Elite Eight. And for me, the best team in the bottom half is Miami. So I would have a Kansas-Miami battle in the eight. But, you know, is Larrañaga able to pull off another Final Four run? I don't know. I don't know if they're disciplined enough to beat a Kansas team who has 9 upperclassmen, which is ridiculous. Last time they did that, 08, won the title.
Right. The last time I saw Miami for any great length of time, they were getting kicked all over the Dean Dome. So, I don't know. So, you've got Kansas coming out?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move quickly to the West. Oregon surprised 1 seed. I'm upset with that because I thought Michigan State deserved a 1. I've got Oregon beating the sacrificial lamb that comes out from Dayton for them. And I got them taking on St. Joe's in the second round. Then the bottom half for me is Baylor and Duke. Bottom half of that one is Baylor and Duke. I got St. Joe's and Baylor, and I got Baylor to the 8 on that end of it.
I'm not as upset with Oregon. They have athletes for days. Seeing them pretty much dominate Pac-12 this year, they didn't really have any lulls like Sparty did. So full body of work, and I hate to throw out that catchphrase, but, you know, Sparty.
Tremendous upside.
So Sparty early, you know, beat Week at the 6 because Izzo's a witch. But then had that lull in the Big Ten where they lost like 4 out of 5 or whatever it was, and then recovered because the calendar changed like they always do. Yale needs to stop raping people, kicking their players off the team and then supporting them. But that's an interesting matchup. You know, Baylor, we kill people. Against Yale, we rape people.
Wow.
That'll be an interesting basketball game. There might not even be any fans in because of all the protests, but...
Wow.
Then underneath there, we got Puke, who trips people intentionally.
I hate that kid.
So I got Oregon coming out of that. Cincinnati shouldn't be in. St. Joe's look pretty good. They might give Oregon a little trouble, but what St. Joe's does is they have a stretch four as their best player. And Oregon has a ton of stretch four. So I don't think that St. Joe's could exploit that against Oregon. I think Oregon would match up pretty well with St. Joe's. So I got Oregon coming out of the top for sure. And then you want me to move to the bottom real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
I would love to see Shaka get through to against VCU. It's not going to happen, but that would be kind of tasty. A little Sweet 16 matchup of Texas against his old boys. But I am not sold on Shaka's team. I mean, I know it's someone else's boys, and he's coached them up pretty well. I mean, Barnes had done
they've
all
had
he could.
I have Northern Iowa beating Texas. And then A&M beating Northern Iowa. I've got Oregon State taking out VCU. And then I have Oklahoma to the 8 against Baylor and Oklahoma coming out.
I would be careful with that VCU-Oregon State game just because Oregon State's got their second-best player behind GP2 out with a foot injury at least through the VCU game, I think. He might be back for the second-round game if they rush him back. But he's a scoring threat. And I wasn't that impressed with Oregon State without that guy. Peyton, you know, did what he does, but they didn't have as good a Pac-12 tournament as I think they could have. But that being said, I think, you know, Buddy Hield and the boys from Oklahoma come out of the bottom.
Absolutely. So that sets up a Big 12, at least for me, a Big 12 Elite Eight matchup, Baylor and Oklahoma, and I've got Oklahoma beating Baylor.
And I have Oregon, Oklahoma, and I have Oklahoma coming out of the bottom.
All right, moving quickly to the East. you're going to love this. Carolina's going to win their first round game. They'll get USC. I've got IU, Kentucky in round two, and I'm taking Big Blue Nation. And in the battle of the Blue Bloods, I'm going to take the Dirty Cows over the Roy Just Fainted's.
Wow. Vertigo. You're going Vertigo on the loss.
I can't. Their guard play is too sketchy, but if they play like they played this weekend, I will gladly take all your money. But I don't know that they can continue that intensity level. I got Notre Dame beating whatever schlub they get from the Michigan-Tulsa game. And then I have Huggy Bear and the boys beating them to death. I'm going to take Whiskey over Pitt. I'm going to take the X over Whiskey. So I've got Xavier, West Virginia, UK, Carolina in the 16, UK and West Virginia. And I'm going to take Big Blue Nation to the Final Four out of the East.
Wow. Wow.
I don't have any confidence in this Carolina guard play to take them deep.
Just a quick note for me. I do have, and I'll be wearing it on St. Patrick's Day because it's green. I have a Florida Gulf Coast shirt because it just says Dunk City. Yeah, and it was because I won a lot of money on them on the money line for both against Georgetown and San Diego State. A couple years ago in 2013. So that was just me saying, hey, thanks, boys. I'll buy some of your gear. It was the least I could do for, you know, what you guys did for me. But that being said, I got Cry Williams and the boys moving on easily. They'll take care of either USC or Providence. I was really impressed with what they did against Virginia just because usually you got to run up and down for them to play well. And Virginia slowed it down like they always do, and Carolina looks solid. If they play up to their potential, I don't even think Kentucky can touch them. They just have more talent. Kentucky, you know, they got guys coming in off the bench named Willis who look like they should probably play at, you know, Fairleigh Dickinson instead. It's just not one of Cal's best recruiting classes. Now, he didn't expect everybody to go pro like the last couple of years. But anyway, I do like – Kentucky to get to the 16, lose to Carolina. I have Notre Dame, press Virginia. I don't like the way Whiskey's been playing. I like Pitt to upset them, but it doesn't matter because X would have beat either one of them. So I got X, press Virginia, Kentucky, North Carolina, and then I got Carolina and Xavier, and I'll take Carolina to the 4.
Okay, and finally wrapping up, in the Midwest, I've got Virginia and Butler in the second round. I'm going to take my 12-5 upset. It's going to be Arkansas Little Rock over Purdue. And this, because I'm going to double down here, I'm going to take Iona over Iowa State. Gonzaga over Seton Hall, Utah over Fresno State. That's just for you. The best team, the second best team in the state of Ohio, the Dayton Flyers over the Syracuses. And the Witch over Middle Tennessee State, Witch over UD, Gonzaga over Utah, Iona to the 16 against UVA, UVA and Michigan State in the 8, and you know who I'm taking in the 8 to get to the 4, right? I don't have to bring up the Witch, do I?
No. All right, real quick, I got about 40 seconds, and then we'll get our final four picks done in the other side. Virginia, Butler, Purdue, Iona, the Hall. I like Fresno State in an upset. Dayton, Sparty. Then I got Sparty and the Hall. I got Perdue and Virginia. Then I got Virginia beating Purdue. And I got the Witch coming out.
Right.
He's Rob Havner. I'm Jeremy Lynch. Listen to us on the other side. You've been listening to the Rob and Mob Show Selection Sunday Special. Pop the cork, Rob. Champagne side.
All right. If you've been following, we've got we usually use this as silly time. We've got some business to take care of here first, and then I'll get to this great story, plus the stats that go with it. It's Lynch and Hav, the Rob and Mob Show. We have reached the Final Four. I have Kansas, Oklahoma, UK, and Michigan State. I have Oklahoma upsetting Kansas. Getting a little revenge for the 1988 tournament. And I have Michigan State beating Kentucky, and I have Michigan State beating Oklahoma.
And I have Sparty, Carolina, weak at the six, and Buddy and boys. I'm actually taking weak at the six to get to the title game.
Oh,
I know. Oh, it pains me more than you. and I have Sparty beating Carolina, which I struggled with that pick for a while just because matchup-wise, do I think Izzo, you know, he's been there seven times since whenever. I mean, the most of any active coaches since, like, you know, 2000 or whatever it is, 99. Something like that. He's been there a crazy amount of times. He only has one title. So, you know, he gets to the four, but then can't necessarily close the deal all the time. I just feel like Sparty might be a tougher team mentally than Carolina. You know, if things go wrong, Sparty might battle through. I don't know. I'm back and forth with that one. But anyway, I'm going to take Sparty against Week at the Six in a rematch of earlier this year. And I got the Witch for the first time in 16 years winning.
16 years, yeah, with the Flintstones. As I'm looking at it, the tournament television coverage on Thursday will kick off with the 12:15 tip is from Providence. It will be Duke and UNC Wilmington. True TV at 12:40 will be Texas Tech and Butler. 1:30 on TNT has Colorado, Connecticut. And 2 o'clock on TBS is Iowa State and Iona. The Des Moines games on TNT will feature Nance, Grant Hill, Bill Raftery, and Tracy Wolfson on the call. So they have split up the dynamic duo of Vern Lundquist and Bill Raftery. So you'll get onions with Jim Nance and Grant Hill, apparently. The second wave of games on Thursday afternoon, CBS will give you Baylor and Yale. Virginia and Hampton on True TV. TNT will have KU and Austin Peay with the best crowd chant ever, Let's Go Peay. And Perdue and Arkansas Little Rock on TBS. The evening sessions will tip at about 6:50 Eastern time, approximately. The third game from Providence will have Miami and Buffalo. It sounds like a Monday night matchup from 1992. Des Moines will have Indiana versus Chattanooga. North Carolina versus Florida Gulf Coast will tip at 7:20 on TBS with Kevin Harlan and Reggie Miller. And Denver's third matchup, Utah and Fresno State. And then the evening will conclude from Providence, starting in Providence, Arizona versus the Vanderbilt-Wichita State winner, Big Blue Nation against Stony Brook, USC and Providence from Raleigh, and the last game of the night that will tip will be the Seton Hall-Gonzaga game. Friday gets underway with Dayton and Syracuse at 12:15.
Before you get into Friday, let me ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
What of Thursday games? What game do you feel like, now you might not have picked it, but, you know, we've had Florida Gulf Coast, we've had Lehigh, we've had
what game feels like it could be the upset special?
What game could be just shock the world? Like, wow, I never saw that coming.
the Vanderbilt-Wichita State winner against Arizona. Because they kind of feel like the Vanderbilt, whoever wins the Vanderbilt-Wichita State game beating Arizona, I could see that happening. Because every time I've seen them since about the middle of February, Arizona looks a little lost and a little confused. Kind of like an old man looking for his wife at the mall is the best way to describe it. And I could see them maybe taking one. But I think Buffalo could get Miami.
I'm gonna throw you one that might surprise you. Little Rock could get Perdomo.
Oh yeah, I'm watching that.
Okay, well Okay, just because they came out here beat Fisher and the boys, and they play really good defense. They got a lot of dudes. They're very athletic. It'll be interesting to see how both teams handle altitude. They're playing in Denver.
Well, yeah, because that was a big deal. Syracuse got to the Final Four through Denver in 96 when they lost to Kentucky in the championship game. And Vegas won their title in Denver in 1990 when we were juniors in high school, for those of you scoring at home. And all those teams that played in that Final Four, Duke, UNLV, Georgia Tech, and Arkansas, so the altitude made a big, big difference. Yeah, so it's NCAA.com. They're on the front page. If you click on the men's basketball tab, we'll give you the complete schedule in order that they'll tip from 12:15 right through the last session on the first 2 days, and then it will update after Friday evening's or after Thursday night's games. It will update for Saturday, and after Friday's games, it will update for the Sunday tips. Excuse me. Lynch and Hav on the Robin Mob Show. Now, this one I've kind of previewed, and I posted this on my Facebook page. And then I want to give you these numbers because you'll appreciate this since you're going to go play golf this week. I saw this on MSN Sports. I think it was Monday morning. And it's Jordan Spieth saying Tiger Woods doesn't get the credit he deserves. In Jordan Spieth's eyes, Tiger Woods does not get enough credit from his fellow golfers, especially the 20-something players of Spieth's generation. In a sit-down interview that aired with David Faraday on his Golf Channel show Faraday last week, Spieth talked about being grateful to Woods for the attention and money that he brought to the game. Tiger deserves a million thank you notes and a million cases of nice wine from every golfer that's coming up and wants to play the PGA Tour, as well as those already on the PGA Tour, he said. He really doesn't get the credit he deserves from us players. I don't think we stress it enough to other people. Professional golf was once reserved for the independently wealthy. Post-Tiger, that reality seems a very distant dream. Now you can make a living in 1 week on the PGA Tour, and we're lucky for that, Spieth said. I mean, admittedly, it hasn't become the cultural melting pot that everybody thought it would be with Tiger, but let me give you some numbers. Tiger joined the PGA Tour on the back end of the 96 season. So I'm going to throw this at you. You'll love this. The 1995 leading money winner on tour was Greg Norman. You know how much he made to win the money title? $1,654,959.
That's almost a made. That's one major now.
No. It gets better. When Tiger debuted on the tour in 96, Tom Lehman won the money title at $1.78 million. Tiger won his first money title in 1997 with tour winnings of $2,066,833, and he became the first guy to crack $2 million. At 99, he was the first guy to crack $5 million because he banked $6,616,585. In his legendary 2000 campaign, he made $9,188,321. And the first guy to crack $10 million was Vijay Singh in 2004. He made $10.916 million. There have been a total of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 $10 million seasons. Vijay Singh in 04, Tiger in 05, 07, and 09. And Spieth last year with his $12 million season. Now, think about that for a minute. You went from 1995, the leading money winner made $1 million. Last year, Jordan Spieth, just for winning the FedEx Cup, made $10 million.
So that was the 10 inside of the 12? Probably not.
Probably not.
Because of all the wins he had, including majors.
Right.
That's just stupid.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's I mean, and Spieth's right. I mean, these guys, you know, you're middle of the pack if you're making $1 million. Maybe less than middle of the pack.
You can barely hold on to your card if you only make $1 million.
Yeah, journeymen are making $1 million now these days. That's amazing.
I've told this story before. When I was covering is a bit of an overstatement. It was at the 1993 Memorial when Paul Azinger won, and for winning, he made $262,000. And I think last year the winner at Mirfield got like $700,000. He made $262,000.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that was insane.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely insane.
That's nuts. So there you go. That's Uncle Rob's damn of the day.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. You know, and another thing back real quick on the Spieth thing. You know, people – Spieth goes, let's see, he wins his first tournament of the year, then proceeds to, you know, have a top 10 and then go 17, missed cut, 21, and I think he finished like 18th today or something like that. And people are, you know, blasting him on Twitter about, you know, if he doesn't have his putter going, he's not that good, blah, blah, blah. And he kind of fired back a little bit and... I heard somebody on Golf Channel saying, hey, Tiger Woods is never coming back to – I mean, we're not going to see another one. You know, whether it's Spieth, McIlroy, Day, anybody who's coming up and coming now, you can't compare any of today's golfers to a guy who made 140 straight cuts, you know, has 14 majors – you know, maybe the second best player of all time, at least currently. It's unfair. I mean, he brought everybody to a certain level, money-wise, financially, and the status of the sport. But then at the same time, the best of those players are being compared to him, and that's not necessarily fair. There will never be another Yahweh.
How many guys deep do you have to go to get to 14 majors? I mean, Phil's got, what, 5 or 6, and Spieth and Rory each have 2. You've got to go, I think you got to go at least 6 or 7 guys deep, 7, 8 guys deep to get to 14 or 15. So this is, the talent pool is deeper, but, you know, well... As always, I have enjoyed it.
Another successful Selection Sunday, said easily. can't wait to get to our next show and look back and see how wrong we were.
Oh, dude, that's always the best part. Once again, robandbob.com. Rob and Bob, you can listen to us on that. And, of course, on blogtalkradio.com. Travel safe, man. Have a good time. Send me another picture of the line at the sports book.
Will do. Say hi to the Midwest EP.
I will, man. Unlimited love.
Peace.
Late.